So, since the 1970s, I have sought wisdom, workshops, books, techniques, practices of self-care, and I confess. My confession is not that I have needed and benefited from those supports, but even though I have benefited, when I get myself to a self-help section of a bookstore or library or TED Talks, I confess that I squirm. In my thoughts, I roll my eyes. I judge it, and it embarrasses me that I judge it. And I know I'm not alone in that. So maybe there's embarrassment because it touches on some leftover shame that I or we are not okay, not whole every day, not full of a sense of well-being all of the time. Maybe the reactive feeling of embarrassment and judgment comes from old warnings against selfish behavior. I do worry that self-care as a commodity and something to buy and attain can border on self-absorption. And if you look at commercial after commercial of advertising, it's not hard to think that self-care is not only self-absorbed, but expensive and exclusive. However, if you think of self-care as practices that we intentionally do to move toward wholeness and well-being, then there is room to explore not only the bookshelves, the iTunes, the Amazon, but religions too. So, from religions, there are rituals that I have learned. Many religions, many rituals. Lighting a candle with intention, touching a prayer wheel, bowing to the morning sun, saying grace, thank you, before a meal, being grateful. To breathe and to be aware we are breathing can be a mercy. So we breathe. We breathe intentionally. We humans build rituals throughout the year in religious communities to remember to breathe in ways that help us remember who we want to be, to help us remember how to forgive, to help us remember how to center ourselves, ground ourselves, focus on possibility, focus on love, and go on. And as individuals, we can create rituals of self-care that remind us of who we want to be, or help us build an intention of who we want to become. So, whether you call them rituals or not, think about what kinds of practices you have, things that you've done in the past, things that you currently do, ways, language, things that you orient yourself towards that can help you because you permit yourself to get back into the track of becoming whole, of acknowledging your desire for well-being. For me, one of the inspirations from the Hebrew Bible was learning about Ruach. Ruach is literally interpreted as vivifying force, vivifying, life-giving force. It's an aspect of God that is understood to be female. And it's understood to be wind, breath, vivifying force. We people in congregations of all sorts identify and name the energy that helps remind us of our source and how to vivify. How to bring ourselves back to life. That's really the intention of much of religion. So whether it's the spirit of Ruah, of Guanyin, who I talked about the last time I was here, of Buddha nature, Saint Francis, Christ consciousness, any of these can bring life-generating, revitalizing breath to those who make room, for those of us who make room in ourselves for that. So it seems to take some sort of development, some practice, even an appendage of some sort, a kind of a soulfulness to be awake to the world. Yet, for some caring moments, some self-caring moments, not battered by all that we are aware of. Because being aware of the world is both beautiful and difficult. So in communities of faith, self-care is balanced out by responsibility to serve a higher purpose, to serve other people, to serve other beings, not only for ourselves. In communities of faith, we build rituals of self-care and community care. If you'll just remember our order of service, there are many places in it where what we're doing is building connection and care for one another right into the order of service. So throughout the year, in most of these faith communities, there are cycles of ritual that bring us through those practices. And as with any institution, anything that's codified, ritual, and the intent that was originally there can be warped, it can be forgotten, it can be ignored, it can be denied. And so then it feels untrustworthy, it feels untrue, because it damages and it excludes truth. So we have to keep reinventing individually, personally, and in communities. We have to keep reinventing the ways in which we are real with one another, the ways in which we can come together and tell the truth, and how we can pull all of ourselves together to become more aware of the possibilities of wholeness and well-being. There are way too many ways in our culture and our human inventions of economics, medical systems, power structures, and religions, way too many systems that serve to shred a person's sense of wholeness and well-being. And when I studied sociology back in the 70s, I was learning how our helping systems themselves also tended to place blame on a person's maladjustment to a world solely. They'd put that blame solely on the head of an individual when it was very clear that there are all kinds of systems that are very hard on individual human beings. So I was learning that there are really good reasons to look out of ourselves and into systems in which we live as a cause for suffering. And it's hard for one person in the midst of feeling of suffering, of feeling lost or enraged or demoralized or unseen. It's really hard for that individual to remember that some of that pain is systemic, reinforced with fear of violence, scarcity, isolation, or lack of time alone. And so coming together is a way for us to lift a step away enough from our own suffering to see that there's more happening here. So on and on, the list of ways is really hard for people, individuals, to establish and hold on to well-being. That list is very, very long. And many of us in this room have set up our lives to help people find their ways to wholeness and well-being. But as much as I've done this for a long, long time, working towards wholeness and self-being, I have to work regularly still to maintain it and there is fault and blame in me still, that maybe there's a weakness, that maybe. I know I'm not alone. I know that it is really hard, given what we live in systems and messages that we get. It's really hard to understand that having a difficult time doesn't mean that we're not whole people. I recently read that over 80% of teenagers who experience depression do not get help. 80%. I, as a teenager, spent a lot of time feeling anxious, a lot of time afraid. I suffered, as many kids suffer, alone. Thankfully, I developed, like so many kids do, my own brand of resistance to things that seemed wrong or hurtful. But mostly, I just put one foot in front of the other as a kid. I got by. I think because I needed to learn so much about self-care, I was drawn to caring for others as I became an adult throughout my adult life. So some of my earliest internships, before I even got paid work and then early paid work, were about survivors of victimization of many, many kinds. I worked with at-risk kids. I worked with survivors of sexual assault, with people recovering from addictions, with battered women and imprisoned men. And over the years of working with these survivors of many ages and kinds, I found many mentors in self-care. I learned a whole lot about how critical it is to be in community with other people working on their own well-being and wholeness. I learned this over and over again. I witnessed people telling their stories to one another and each finding themselves in some piece of that story and finding their courage inspired by those stories. I have been feeling like a barrel of garbage lately, says one of the teens. Not studying, not sleeping very well, really bored out of my mind. Actually, he said bored out of my gourd. This came out of the mouth of a ninth grader at the other end of the table. And this is the table where I'm an advisor for LGBT kids. At the other end of the table, a junior, one of the girls I know, because she's been very upfront about this, has been suffering very dearly from anxiety. She said, "I know I can't fix anything for you, but your hair looks really great lately. You are really creative, you know." "I know I can't fix anything for you, but your hair looks really great lately. You are really creative, you know." And then other teenagers piped in with tips for how to get work done while anxious, how to remind yourself that you're okay when you don't feel like it. You would be surprised how many times writing on your hand came up. So we closed out the meeting with inviting people to say an ending statement. They didn't have to, but people would say, "Okay, I'm fine, I'm hungry." And then tomorrow, I go to the doctor to talk about hormone treatment to transition. Silence. He who was born and labeled she begins the road to bring continuity between his inner and outer life experience. And as the kids absorbed this, they just erupted in cheers and applause, slapping him on the back. And then at that moment, the head of one of the youth goes down gently on the table. And I say, "Want to share?" And this youth identifies neither male nor female, but different. We and they are pronouns that this young person used. This one teen that carries the strain of being undefinable and different has heard that the journey towards wholeness is possible. It's been begun by another student. That glimpse of the possibility of wholeness was overwhelming enough, so they had to put their head down. And then they go step by step by step. These kids come back every week to hear each other's stories and get glimpses of the possibility of wholeness and well-being. Do you know, I'm guessing you've probably heard the Audre Lorde quote about self-care. She's a famous Black poet and activist who has since died of cancer. She says, "I have come to believe that caring for myself is not self-indulgent. Caring for myself is an act of survival." And in another passage, she writes, "Caring for myself is not self-indulgent, it is self-preservation, and this is an act of political warfare." Caring for myself is not self-indulgent, it is self-preservation, and this is an act of political warfare. Self-care, the journey towards wholeness for some, is a terrifying leap into the unknown, as it is for this teenager, as it was for many battered women that I worked with who were leaping from a terrifying unknown into a terrifying known to a terrifying unknown. But this week, 100 or so people of color who also are Unitarian Universalists come together as people of faith at a conference for the purpose of self-care and wholeness as Unitarian Universalists of color. And they know they're supported by the white majority community of Unitarian Universalists to do this, for many are prophets among us. We have UU gatherings of youth, LGBT folks, women, men, people in recovery, people who move through life with disabilities. We come together in community to move toward wholeness and well-being through what life hands us. Why it is, I'm not entirely sure that I can have learned from so many mentors and prophets and groups all through these years, why it is that I can still approach my own self-care as my sole responsibility and province of me alone is so odd to me. It is amazing. It's actually kind of shocking to me that so recently I experienced a radical sense of my self-care in a spiritual community of we care. That's where I got that. It clicked into me, that idea of we care, was that online fasting community for a week. Online, no less. Me, the Luddite. I found that being in community with this group of people who were fasting in order to gain strength for the common good and for well-being was what I needed to be able to endure and to fortify myself. It was called Fast for Power online. Meditation, fasting, Tai Chi, I have for many, many years as a single person done those practices in groups of individuals. That particular fasting week was done in daily witness with others, where we talked about and reminded each other of why we were doing it. And so, wow, we care became the ground of inspiration for me, and I know everyone else because everyone said so. It became another measure of individual well-being connected directly and not separable from the group. Made it really hard for me to wag a stick at myself and say that I was weak or lazy if I fell short of my goals. Isn't that interesting? Because I was grounded in a group of people whose purpose was to nurture each other for the greater good, made it harder for me to blame myself if I was having difficulty with the discipline, because I could go back to the group and the group would feed me again, and I would then feed the group. It's probably going to take me, a couple years to figure out why this was so profoundly like a paradigm shift in my head. It's going to take me a while. Probably a couple more sermons, writing, journals, thinking about it, experiencing it in different ways to try to help me get out of my training as a white middle class, lower middle class, educated person, trained in individuality. It's going to take some time. But I've experienced something that I believe is here as well, that could be nurtured more, that we can develop this muscle to promote the well-being of this gathering, to promote the well-being of this gathering for the greater good, so that each of us also is strengthened for our own self-care along the way. That's why I started off with those uncomfortable statements about how I'm, and individuals within this congregation have said to me from different families and different experiences that they're not okay, and it makes it hard to come here. For me, that's not a failure of this community. It's an opportunity for us to develop that muscle more, reach out more. So, sharing is part of what we do routinely, and multiple people have said to me in other congregations, the sharing is more difficult. It's not as easy to do. The depth of sharing here is important. That happens in small group ministries, in larger congregations. I wonder how many of you would be interested in being part of a small group of people that meets for a succinct amount of time in order to share deeply, where the job is not to fix each other, is not to get into each other's heads, it's to listen to each other's experiences and wisdom about important questions in our lives. If you're interested in that, come see me, send me an email, call me. I think that kind of a practice would help us develop that muscle in this congregation. So, my, Unitarian Universalists are in many ways swimming against the tide or against the mainstream in how we articulate our beliefs and what it means to belong, how we claim and explore the truth. We do indeed have a very special gift to offer there. Yet I think we need to work on the muscle of we care more. I think we are very much like our larger culture in allowing individualism, privacy, pride to make it harder for us to share when we're not doing as well. And there are those of you who I know who have shared publicly, who come in here very real and are willing to share that. And I want to thank you. And I also acknowledge that it takes energy. It takes courage. So it's more than just us as a community I'm thinking about, because it's teenagers I'm also thinking about, and our kids. I know the teenagers in the room right now are aware in their schools that some kids don't make it, that some kids have a lot of depression and get through it, but some don't make it. And that, in fact, suicide ends the life of more teenagers than cancer, heart disease, AIDS, birth defects, stroke, pneumonia, influenza, and chronic lung disease combined. 5,400 teenagers attempt suicide each day in the United States. This comes from the National Institute of Mental Health. So our teenagers know that life is not easy all the time, and some have more resilience than others. And we all, as adults, could be awesome role models for being willing to not be all right and to together say, life is hard. We belong together. I'm glad you're here. So that's our revolutionary message. We all have dignity and worth. We are all independent and yet dependent on one another and all of life. We are interconnected. We are each and together on a journey for truth and meaning and beauty and love. So now we're going to keep working at figuring out what this looks like in practice, here in community, and at home.